Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, it's July. I guess it's July when this drops. It's June right now. And I'm kind of in a weird relationship with sports, and I want to get into that by asking, what are you currently enjoying in sports? Like, what is a late June, early July, like, sports enjoyment life look like for you?
Yeah, that's we are entering the doldrums. I mean, I'm a baseball fan, yeah. And the Twins are competitive, yeah. So a lot of my enjoyment mm-hmm. centers around that. If they were miserable, it would be a much shorter list of things to enjoy. But yeah. we're coming off the NBA draft, which I find drafts yeah. very enjoyable. Less so yeah. than I used to, because I used to yeah. be like, this is franchise changing, and now I'm like, an infusion of talent. This is fun.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're coming up on NFL off-season, training camp is like a month away, et cetera. So
yeah,
it's kind of this in-between. I have a few very specific things that are bringing me great enjoyment right now, though.
Dude, I would love to hear about them. What are
Have you encountered a gentleman in Major League Baseball named Spencer Strider?
Dude, I haven't, but that's a tier one name. That's an elite name. Here's been my issue with baseball. Like, I've had trouble getting going with it this year, in part because the Mariners suck, but in part because watching a Mariners game in June is like just scrolling progressive Twitter. Like, you're just getting a sermon and it's not fun. And I'm like, how about I skip June and check in on you guys in July? That seems nice. So, like, I've had trouble getting there with the Mariners. I'm enjoying a lot of CFL. And every June, the CFL kind of like slides into the DMs of my life and is like, hey, how you doing? You know, you good? We okay? And I'm like, oh, yeah, CFL's back. So I've been really enjoying that. But that's about it. But tell me about Spencer Strider. That sounds
okay,
fascinating.
So the quickest way to catch up on Spencer Strider, kind of his whole sort of vibe and ethos, is to go. Yeah. I realize you're not on social media, but I think you have secret access yeah. to these things.
yeah.
Go From find the Pitching Ninja account, either on Instagram or yeah. Twitter, and look yeah. for it. A guy pitching for the Atlanta Braves who looks like a slightly shorter, muscled-up version of 1990s John Smoltz. So, mustache, he wears his uniform like they did in the 90s, and he's got yeah. quads for days. He's probably
Holy
like,
crap, dude. I'm looking at this guy now. You're yeah, right.
He's probably like 5'10", 5'11", throws yeah. absolute heat and a slider that, yeah. Makes people's knees crumble. And and when he strikes somebody out, he has this awesome, like, his pitching motion goes straight into, like, a pivot swagger.
Oh, and dude, I love that. Like, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Yes.
In our athlete actions draft. So that could be one of them.
And he's filthy. Like, he's striking out like 14 guys per nine innings or something like that right now. But anyway, wow. watching Spencer Strider highlights and pitch. I don't watch a lot of Braves games, but they've always yeah. kind of been my backup team, because I had a lot yeah. of family in Georgia. The Twins are my team, but the Braves were. So sure, I always sure. keep an eye on them. He has been an absolute joy because he's a rookie. He's filthy. Yeah. He's got swagger. And he looks like he belongs in 1997.
Dude, that's fantastic. That hits a lot of like the criteria that I'm looking for in an enjoyable baseball player, for sure. Pipe, let's take a break. When we come back, we can talk about more sports enjoyment. I've got a couple of NBA Finals things that I want to run by you, and then we're going to draft our favorite athlete actions, like things that athletes do that we are either currently enjoying or have enjoyed over the years. So let's take a break.
But look around you. Your family, your faith, they're not in the way. They are the way.
From the creators of Jesus Revolution comes the incredible true story.
It's going to be dangerous and scary, and giving up, it's not an option.
The story of one family's journey from down under to center stage. Unsung Hero, a For King and Country film starring Candace Cameron Bure and Terry O'Quinn. In theaters now. Visit unsunghero.movie to learn more. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, Pipe, we're back. What else are you enjoying in sports right now? Anything we haven't covered?
A couple quick things. One is Byron Buxton has been healthy for the Twins for most of the year. I mean, they've had to manage his games and whatever, but like he hasn't missed 20 straight games, which is the norm.
Yeah.
And he's the most exciting player for the Twins, maybe since Kirby Puckett, maybe more so than that because he's a different kind of athlete. So really enjoyed the odds of me watching him are like 2 out of 3 when I turn on a Twins game, which is way better than any previous season. And then the last thing is just a category. There is so much young talent in sports. The NBA has a ton of young stars. The NFL has a ton of young stars, especially at quarterback, which is great because the more quarterbacks are good, the better football is across the board. But I mean, at a ton of positions. Yeah. And then baseball has a ton of young stars. You know, there's like Albert Pujols and Miguel Cabrera are on their way out. But like Ronald Acuna and all these guys who are, you know, second, third, fourth year players are decent. So it feels like sports are in good hands. Like we've got another decade of excitement with these young guys. So that generally makes me happy because I just like watching sports be good and exciting and young talent is fun.
Dude, that's an interesting perspective, and I like that.
Because you're and you're like, I want to watch the old guys play.
Dude, no, I am, but I'm like, I'm drawn in by the young guys, and I'm drawn in from time to time when there's a young guy whose approach or aesthetic or play style or whatever kind of does it for me. And I like it when there's like the chance of that happening in a whole bunch of different spots, for sure.
See, young talent in baseball stands out to me more than the other sports because, like, basketball always has flashy rookies. You know, there's eras of stars and whatever, but like, young guys are always overrated in basketball, but still fun to watch.
Totally,
young guys in football, like football has such short career spans that like a young guy is a star. If you're 24 and you're good, you're a star. Baseball is different because like, young guys come in and they all remind us of old guys, but they do things in kind of a new way, or they bring something extra to the game, or there's a different flair. They bring personality. So I feel like young stars in baseball stand out more. Also, baseball is the sport that not everybody, that's an exaggeration. There has long been talk of like, oh, baseball's in decline. Nobody cares about baseball, yada, yada. And I'm like, there's a bunch of like 23-year-olds just chewing this game up right now. I think it's going to be okay. The kids are all right.
I think it's harder to be a young star in baseball, too. And this isn't to, like, devolve into an argument about which sport's the hardest. I mean, football is the hardest on your body. I think we would all agree with that. But as far as, like, and this is, in some sense, born of watching the Mariners year after year and having them continually have these quote-unquote can't-miss prospects that either miss or just become mediocre. And, you know, it's given me a respect for how hard it is to be truly a young star in baseball, you know, and we kind of caught it with Kyle Lewis last year, but he's, you know, basically been hurt ever since. We didn't catch it with Kelnick. It remains to be seen on some of the young arms that we have, if they're going to actually pop, but like,
but then you got tough, Julio Rodriguez, you know? Who is a power speed phenom. And it's like, He came up as one of the top one or two prospects in baseball, and he has looked it. And what is he, like 19, 20?
Totally. Yeah, he's like 20, and you watch him, and you're like, yeah, I see it. You know, I see what everybody else saw, obviously, and it's translating, you know, in a way that it hasn't yet for Kelnick. But, like, I guess while I am curmudgeonly, there's a kind of eternally optimistic streak in me that goes, I want to see Kelnick put it together. You know, I want to see him come back at like 24 and like stick it up everybody's rear, you know? And I always kind of eternally root for that. And I think baseball, it can be a figure it out later in life type sport.
Yes.
Like your emotions change and your approach to life changes and maybe you can figure it out, you know?
Well, and baseball is not a sport that that being a supreme athlete necessarily means you're going to be good. Like if you're a supreme athlete in football,
yeah,
you have to sabotage yourself not to be good.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Baseball's not like that. It's a technique game. It's a, you know, so mm-hmm. you see these guys who, like, being an athlete worked for them all the way up to double or triple A. They get called up to the majors and they strike out 3 out of every 4 at bats for their first, you know, 3 weeks, and they get sent back down. And what almost always happens is either the game sort of slows down for them and they just start to recognize things more, or they stop doing things the way they've always done it and they learn a new way to do things, new swing techniques, new whatever, you know, batting stance, and it clicks. So a 24-year-old in baseball can be, you can be like, star prospect, stinks for 2 years, figures something out, and goes on to have a 10-year career. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And it's and it's awesome when it happens. Like, it's fun to see those guys figure it out.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and you root for that. And I think, to me, that's what makes baseball a little bit more interesting than, in this way, than basketball or even football. Like, there's a sense in football, you give a prospect a couple of years and you kind of know. And in fact, like, people at the highest level have talked about, like, you can tell within a week of training camp if a prospect is going to be the guy. And, like, players talk about this, right? So they'll welcome a first round pick onto a team and see the guy in pads for a week and kind of, they'll know if he's got it or if he doesn't. And, you know, it's just not true of baseball.
I think basketball is actually different. More similar to baseball in that way. You know, football, you see guys progress, mm-hmm. you know, especially like quarterbacks, receivers, these guys who are like, they fine tune their game, they pick up different things. But basketball is one, especially now, because guys are coming into the league. You know, I think when guys were drafted as juniors and seniors in college, you kind of got what you got. Their game had a certain, but those first, like between the ages of like 19 and 22 or 23, that refinement, like, so I'm, as a Timberwolves fan, I get to watch Anthony Edwards play. And Edwards came into the league, and he was better than a lot of people thought he was going to be pretty quick, but super raw. Mm-hmm. And then his second year, you start to see some refinement to his game, the way that he reads the defense, the way that he slowed down, the way he sets guys up, his jumper improved. And it's a little bit like watching a guy make swing adjustments in baseball, where you're like, oh, there's a technique difference. There's a, you know, you can tell he's worked on that particular skill set. And, you know, even like Steph Curry, you remember in his first couple years in the league, like, tons of ankle injuries, good, great shooter, but not a high volume shooter. He relearned how to run to protect his body, and then became the guy who has now sort of revolutionized the game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm glad you mentioned Steph Curry. So I was in Vegas a month ago, and when I was in Vegas, the NBA finals were happening. And then I feel like the NBA finals got over like 3 days ago, so it took like a month, and I didn't care. I haven't cared for a long time. My question is, did you care? And do you care about Steph Curry and the Warriors thing at all? Like, because I know people who super care about it, and I can't understand why they do. Where are you at on that?
I feel like my relationship with basketball has gotten very polarized. You know, there was a long period of time where I kind of cared about everything. I cared about arguing about legacies. I cared about who was the best right now. I cared about every young player coming up. And I kind of generally care about the league, but I care about it a lot more in terms of, like, where's the league going? Who are the kind of strata of players? These stars, the young and up-and-comer guys. I care about it from like a legacy standpoint. So I care a lot about Steph in the sense of, like, when they do a top 150, because the league has been around for 150 years, where is he going to fall? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not the arguments, but just like, this man changed basketball. He changed how basketball is played by 8-year-olds and 18-year-olds and 28-year-olds. He broke the backbone of like old school basketball. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, like, he kind of broke the chains off. So yeah, I care about that. I also watched like 4 minutes of the finals. And so I the series did not intrigue me at all. I hate the Celtics. Ever since Kevin Garnett stopped being on, I didn't care about them before that. I cared about them while he was there. because he remains my favorite player ever. And then I just dislike them strongly beyond that. I don't like watching them play. I don't like they just the whole vibe of the Celtics annoys me. And which is weird because they have really fun players on that team. And and a good young coach who, you know, stepped in for Brad Stevens, and they seemed like a smart organization, and I hate them.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't explain it. It's just one of those irrational, like gross, I don't want to be around them kinds of things.
Dude, to me, like the irrational hate thing with the NBA Finals is it takes so long. Like, why does it take a month to play a 7-game series, or in some cases a 4-game series or what? It just takes forever. And like I lose track of the fact that it's still going, but I'll like pop open my ESPN app on TV to watch a CFL game, and they're hyping up game 5 of the NBA Finals, and I was like, oh, this was going on a month ago when I was in Vegas. I guess it's still going.
Yeah.
You know, and look, the whole NBA timetable in general makes no sense to me. So in the way that the NFL kind of elegantly spaces out all the stimulus, it's like the NBA Finals happens. It's like, oh, hurry up and have the draft. You know, so like 2 days later, you're having the draft. 2 days later, Summer League starts. So the kids that just got drafted, like you're seeing them in the uniform in some half-empty arena playing Summer League games. And I have thoughts on Summer League, too. We'll get back to that. But, like, I just don't get the NBA timetable as opposed to the NFL timetable, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think the NBA has been AAU-ized to create it in this
interesting.
Like, you know, when we were growing up, again, I'm going to go full old grumpy guy here. When we were growing up, every sport had a season, you know? It was the weird kid who played like indoor soccer in the winter, which in certain parts of the country would have been outdoor soccer. I grew up in Minnesota. Like, you had to be like kind of a psycho to do your sport in the off season. Everybody else was like, fall is football season or soccer season. Winter is basketball season. Spring is baseball season. Maybe you're on a, you know, pony league or whatever team that extends through the summer, but then it ends in time for football practice to start. And so you could legitimately play three sports and just rotate from one to the next. And now basketball, I think, and soccer were the first two that became year-round sports. And the NBA just kind of follows that. And then they also got into what they call the science, which I don't know how scientific it is, where they're like player rest. You know, the finals go longer because these guys need more time for travel between games. And I'm like, Elgin Baylor would spit on you. But
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's – but also – It's just kind of the way it is right now. It does. The NFL season will always hold a particular place in my heart because of the intensity of every action, like every competition. There are now 17, and then everything feels single elimination, you know. Yeah. And the NBA just lasts forever, and you're like, you lose a playoff game, you're like, man, I don't know, you got a bunch more chances to turn this thing around. They used to have 5-game series that went then 7 later on and so forth, and everything's a 7-game series now. So it's the shift in it, but also it's like it feels more like baseball now in the sense of like, only the last quarter of the season matters for the standings is what it feels like, and then the playoffs kind of last forever.
Yeah, and there's like no sense even of when it starts. You know, like, I vaguely get this sense like mid-fall, like, oh, the NBA is starting. But I couldn't tell you even within a month when that actually is, because the whole thing is just like this blob of it's kind of always in your life at a low level. Now, I can remember back when there was like a year or two that I got really into Summer League for some reason. And like ESPN3 was carrying it and I would watch it. And like they were playing outside, in like practice jerseys. And I think I was interested in it because I'm interested in like philosophically the idea of which games matter and which games don't. Like a game mattering, like deciding that a game matters and who it matters to has always been like a really interesting thing for me. So the fact that ESPN was carrying like the Las Vegas Summer League and they were playing on like an outdoor court in front of 12 people, I'm like, this is interesting for some reason, you know? And what makes this game matter more or less than like I don't know, like Bulls Pistons in November in front of 6,000 bored people, you know? I don't know. Does that move the needle for you at all?
It does. And, you know, mattering has always been a matter of scarcity to some degree, you know, like,
yeah,
we've talked about this on our regular podcast. Like, Christmas feels less important to me now because Christmas season starts in September, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just,
that's right.
There's not scarcity anymore. You're like, oh, it's a season. It's not a day, yeah, or a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And exactly. Basketball feels a little bit like that. And there is more coverage of the off season than the season in a lot of ways.
You sure. Know?
NBA draft coverage, and you know, NBA free agency is about to kick off right now, and like, there's going to be so much drama. It's soap opera ish. Which on the one hand,
yeah,
a lot of fun. It's dude soap opera. But on the other hand, it's like there's so much hype about, you know, was this a good trade return value for Kyrie Irving? The answer is yes. If you got anything for Kyrie Irving, you came out ahead. But
exactly.
And then all of a sudden, like, then you get to the season and you're like, all of that energy amounted to some players moving around. League power structure didn't change that much. The stars are the stars. And so there's just, it is this sort of endless, like, forcing hype is kind of what it feels like.
No, totally. Pipe, let's talk about some things that are real. When we come back after the break, we're going to draft our favorite athlete actions. So we're going to take a break, and then I'm going to have you explain this to me, and we'll see if I did it right. But I'm excited to get into this. We'll be back.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, Pipe. So you floated this idea out via text last night, I guess. And it was the idea of drafting certain specific actions that athletes do that we enjoy, that we think are cool, that we like watching. I was immediately on board with this, I think without even really understanding what I was supposed to do, but I was on board with the idea of it. So, give us like a sentence of setup, and then we'll give you the number one pick overall to kick off this draft of athlete actions.
Okay. So yeah, the idea here is I was watching the Twins the last couple nights, and, Byron Buxton has tripled in back-to-back games. And
yeah,
a triple is always exciting. He, watching Byron Buxton hit the gas going from first to third is one of the most enjoyable actions in sports to me. So,
oh, dude, I love it.
That was kind of where that's where this idea came from. I was like, man, what else do I enjoy watching? Like watching Byron Buxton go first to third. And I started to kind of come up with a list. So you could go two ways with this. One is an action that lots of athletes do, and you just love to see it on the field. Like when an athlete does X, it just blows my mind. Or particular athletes doing a particular thing, you know, Buxton going first to third. I'm not going to give a bunch of other examples because I don't want to accidentally rob you of your picks. So that's the setup, is what are very particular things that happen on the field, the court, whatever, that you go, oh, that action. That's the thing.
Dude, I love it. We're going to have very different things because mine, I went more kind of cultural with this, but the spirit is the same. Like, these are things I really enjoy. These are things that to me make sports better, make sports interesting, give sports figures personalities. So yeah, we're going to enjoy this, and we'll go as long as we need to cover all of them. So, Piper, you're on the clock. You're at the podium to announce round one, pick one, athlete actions draft. What do you got?
Oh man, this is tough because I feel like there's so many right answers. This is a loaded draft. Let's put it that way. There's many options.
A lot of pressure with number one overall.
Yeah, you know? I'm gonna go with an old reliable because I feel like you can't miss with your first pick. You know, there has to be total steadiness. And I'm simply gonna say spin moves.
Yeah, spin moves are so fun, dude.
And here's the great thing about spin moves. They they're in multiple sports.
Yeah.
And when they work, the defender looks like an absolute fool. So you think about a great pass rusher, just putting someone in the blender. You think
Dwight Freeney.
Yes.
Yeah, Dwight Freeney, the blender, you know.
You think about a running back who just loses a guy in the open field. You think about a guy playing low post in basketball and just leaving the defender waving at air or driving to the hoop. Soccer players, you know, I don't think they call them spin moves because they call some everything. They probably have some goofy British name for it. But it's always exciting when it goes right. So first action, like athlete action that I'm going to take is the spin move.
Dude, I'm going to say a thing for you because this guy was a Minnesota athlete, but also for all of our listeners who are like north of 60 years old. Vikings running back Chuck Foreman.
Yes.
King of the spin move. He was the first in the like NFL films era. So in the era of like slow-mos and replays and really the TV NFL era in like the 70s to popularize the spin move. And he was the first king of it. So shout out Chuck Foreman.
So quick Vikings Chuck Foreman legend. Story. One of my first jobs in high school was working at a place called Nick's Sports World, which no longer exists.
It was like, that it sounds was like an amazing
it
job.
It was a Minnesota pro shop right downtown Minneapolis. So kind of.
Love it.
A few blocks from the Metrodome. And so periodically, Vikings athletes, you know, Carl Eller and Chuck Foreman being the two foremost, would come in to the shop either to do signings or just to swing in. Chuck Foreman, though, would come in and we had a rack of 8x10 glossies of various athletes. He would come in and buy a stack of his own to sign.
That's phenomenal.
And carry around with him to give out to people. As
see, I love that.
In. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's so good.
He remained exciting all the way deep into his retirement.
Dude, you know what we should do? We should do a whole episode on like weird jobs that we've had in sports and like the stories that we've collected as a result. And honestly, we should have maybe done this week because one of my weird sports jobs was I worked as a ball boy for the Colts when I was in high school. And it was when Tony Siragusa was like early career and he was so funny and so vicious. He was vicious to me, but in a cool way. We got to do a whole app on this and I would enjoy it because I have lots of questions about your job at this place because it sounds amazing. But I'm going to go to the podium pipe. I'm going to run my card up. I'm going to make the first pick. This one, in a similar vein, I feel like it always delivers. Like early career, mid-career, this guy, late career, this guy. This aspect of his game always delivered. It's Mike Tyson ring walks. Give me a Tyson ring walk.
Yes.
You know, if I can watch like 90 seconds of something on YouTube and I just need like a little pick-me-up, if I'm bored at work, if I'm discouraged... Give me a little Tyson ring walk, the slit towel, the black shoes, black shorts, the way that he would walk to like a Public Enemy song. I always liked the song. Like early career, it was Public Enemy. Late career, it was DMX. Always liked it. He would come in and he would walk right by his opponent and like stare him in the face. And 9 times out of 10, he won the fight right there. I'm a big Tyson ring walk guy. I feel like it's a safe first pick. This is like taking Peyton Manning instead of Ryan Leaf, whatever year that was. Tyson Ringwalk never disappoints. It's my first round athlete action thing pick.
Yeah, that's a great one because it's like a setup for everything that follows, you know?
Yeah.
Like if he had, like Tyson wouldn't have been the same fighter and presence without that, even though he didn't actually fight at all while doing that. I kind of love that.
No, I love it too. And like, especially in contrast to, I don't know if you've watched like a big heavyweight pay-per-view in like the last 5 years, but the ring walks are ridiculous. They're like choreographed Broadway shows with like costumes and like secondary characters. And they're so stupid, dude. They're so dumb. Like Deontay Wilder, it takes him like 15 minutes to get into the ring. Even Tyson Fury, who I like, same deal. And give me a Tyson ring walk. Dude, Tyson was practically running to the ring. Like, he couldn't wait to get in there and, like, rip your face off. And to me, that's what a fighter should be. It was everything that was great about boxing. in that era. All right, second rounders, Pipe. We can find a lot of value here. A lot of superstars come out of the second round. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with this is a particular kind of play. So it's sure. It's not a particular athlete, although I can think of particular athletes who do it well. It is the diving stop deep behind third mm-hmm. base. Usually in foul territory where you catch, you know,
yes.
the diving stop and then the throw across mm-hmm. the diamond. That's like a 400-foot throw to get the guy at first. So the
dude, that's
deep
a
diving stop behind third, that play is never not just a work of art.
No, yeah, it's the kind of play that you see it, whether you're at a AA minor league game or a major league game, you see it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's one of the most athletic things I've ever seen in my life. You know, and it's less sort of devastatingly athletic than like a Jordan dunk or, I don't know, somebody like flying over the pile to score a touchdown, but it's beautiful in its own way, you
and
know?
I went for Father's Day, my wife and kids got me tickets to the Nashville Sounds a couple weeks ago. And so we went, and so this is a AAA team. Most of these guys will never make the major leagues. And what you realize about plays like that is that, it, you know, when you watch, you know, you watch Michael Jordan or LeBron James or whatever, you're like, oh, normal people can't do that. Normal people yeah. can play catch.
Yeah.
We've all played catch. So then you watch a guy make a play like that, or even just a normal throw from third, and you're like, normal people cannot do that. That's a long yeah. throw, and he puts it right on that guy's glove every single time. Then you get, you know, the athleticism yeah. of the player. It feels even more spectacular because it's something you almost think you could do, and then you watch it up close, and there is no chance.
Well, you watch it up close, and then you go home and you realize, like, I can't hit the glove of my son from, like, 30 feet consistently. Like, I can't
yeah, just pop
I can't
gun.
Put it on him with any kind of, yeah, with any kind of consistency. And, yeah, I think, to your point, one of the things I love the most about pro sports is the moment where you realize these guys are so different. They're so special. They're the best in the world at what they do. Like, NBA warm-ups was like that for me. So, like, when I was writing NBA stuff in the early 2000s, like I would get there super early and just watch them do shoot-arounds and all that stuff. And like without a guy in their face, they would almost never miss.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
even
this
the
is amazing.
Lousy shooters, like JaVale McGee hits yeah. like 20 out of 25 from the corner threes, and that guy can't shoot to save his life.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous, dude. And you're just like in awe of how good these guys are, which is a super fun way to feel. It feels really pure. All right, I'm going kind of cultural for my second one. I'm going kind of curmudgeonly old man on this one, but I'm going to put a positive twist on it. My second round draft pick is any Belichick press conference. I like this. I like a Belichick presser. Here's why. For decades, athletes and coaches and sports people have been complaining about the media. And like an athlete complaining about the media is boring. Like it's a lazy take. It's stupid. It doesn't take into account the role that the media plays. But Belichick has gone meta in terms of complaining about the media by just turning the presser into like Belichick performance art. He's so dismissive. He's so petty. Every once in a while, somebody asks him a good question and he gets like professorial and he'll go 25 minutes on fullbacks or like special teams play or some amazing thing that he cares about. The Belichick press conference to me is a reminder that like a coach can be non-robotic and have a personality. And I think it makes the NFL better and I enjoy it. It's my second round pick. Belichick pressers. Where you at?
That's a very Belichickian draft pick as well. You know, the guy who Belichick is known for just like finding a guy that he wants on his team. And he just picks him regardless of, you know, kind of what the draft board
consensus
say.
Yeah, yeah.
Consensus does not matter. That's a little bit how I feel about that pick. I think it fits your team really well. You knew exactly what you wanted. Yeah. You targeted him. You know, you didn't have to move up in the draft for him. So you didn't give up anything extra. And, I would rate the pick as inconsistent, but really high ceiling.
Yeah. Dude, totally. So, like, if I'm this team, like, I'm loving my team so far. Like, if my team is just Tyson Ringwalks and Belichick pressers, like, I'm in love with my team. I don't know if the world does. I don't know if it's a winning team, but I'm really happy with my draft so far. But I agree. This is, like, this is the Cole Strange of of this exercise. Like, I really love the player, but I don't know if anyone else does. Pipe, third round, who you got?
Third round, this is a very specific thing by a very specific athlete. And it was watching Randy Moss get on top of a defensive back while that guy didn't even realize Randy Moss was running.
Yeah.
So
I love it.
You know, Moss hesitates off the line, he breaks downfield, and he looks like he's jogging, and then so the defensive back is still backpedaling. And then Moss is three steps behind him before he can flip his hips and run with him, because Moss's extra gear was unlike anything I have ever seen. And it never looked like an extra gear. It just, he just was faster. And so that, because, and the best thing about that moment was the anticipation of, oh, here comes the throw. Like, Culpepper's going to find him. Cunningham's going to find him. Any of those crappy Vikings, Gus Frerotte or Jeff George or Brad Johnson, they're all going to find him, because the moment that guy fails to turn and run with him, it's 40 yards, 50 yards, 60 yards down the field. And so that particular action of him getting on top of a defensive back is my third round pick.
Dude, I'm so glad you brought this up, because part of my summer, and part of what I'm enjoying about sports, I should have mentioned this up top, I've been watching a lot of 2009 Vikings, because I think I wanted to watch like Steve Hutchinson or somebody very specific. So like, I dialed up a bunch of 2009 Vikings, which was late career Favre. I know you hate Favre, but late career Randy Moss, like second time around Randy Moss with the Vikings, still a stud, still really good at what you just described. And I watched this game. They were playing the Jets, and the announcers are falling all over themselves for three quarters about how, like, oh, Cromartie, he's such an athlete. He's locking down Randy Moss for three quarters, and then Moss just goes bananas in the fourth quarter. And he makes, like, two or three highlight-type plays. I know you don't like Favre, but Favre was really fun. Like, Favre made the NFL better. This is late career, you know, running around, flipping the ball still down the field 50 yards, like elite arm talent Favre.
Oh, I hate Brett.
Finding Moss.
I hate Brett Favre, but I loved to hate Brett Favre. Like,
sure.
NFL was definitively more fun with him than without him. He was such a great villain. Like, just one of the most unlikable villains of all time. The problem was when he had to be on my team, I was very uncomfortable with this. But yeah, he 100% agree with he made the game more fun.
Well, and he had a personality, like, unlike all these robots that you have now and you know, these kids who, like, get 2.5 years into their first contract and they want to renegotiate. It's annoying. But 2009 Vikings, Favre, Moss doing the things that you have described. Really, really fun stuff, for sure. All right, third round. I got to open my notes here. Okay. This is another kind of old man thing, but it dovetails with a thing that I just genuinely loved. And I had to get a Walter Payton thing in here. My third round pick is Walter Payton, touchdown non-reactions. So Payton would do an incredible thing. Like, he would fly over a huge mass of humanity and tumble into the end zone, or he would, like, I don't know, just run 12 yards to the pylon and get there before everybody else, or he'd run somebody over. Peyton was my favorite player of all time, by the way. And then he'd get in there, and he would just flip the ball to the referee very nonchalantly. Or he'd give it to, like, one of his linemen to spike it. And Peyton played on garbage teams for the first 8 years of his career, probably. The Bears didn't get good until 84. And in 87, Peyton retired. So, yeah, about year one through year eight, he was just on trash teams, playing behind trash offensive lines.
Yeah.
And he was just a stud and a classy guy. And I like how he handled it when he got in the end zone. It's my third round pick. So, again, I'm kind of, and We'll have to think about how we stacked our draft boards here. Like, if I had to watch YouTubes of, like, only these things for the rest of my life, it would be really satisfying. Because I'd get the touchdown, and then I'd get the non-reaction, and I'd get the Tyson ring walks, I'd get some Belichick pressers. I could kind of live on YouTubes of that stuff for the rest of my sports watching life if I had to. So Peyton scoring touchdowns and then not reacting, that's my round three pick.
See, and I think there's bonus added value to that pick because if on the YouTube scale, it means you're watching a lot of Walter Payton highlights and touchdowns, which is great. Also, I think you might actually get a 2-for-1 pick here because I think it also goes with the Barry Sanders non-reactions.
Totally, so which I loved also.
You're a few years older than me. I didn't watch a lot of Walter Payton. I watched a ton of Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders was my favorite player pre-Randy Moss.
Sure.
And he was the same way. Yeah. Insane, did something insane in the field, gets to the end zone, and just hands the ball to the ref. And I remember the commentators were always like, see, kids, that's how you do it. And I was like, oh, shut up. But then at the same time,
I know.
Like, it was the most, like, bad A move you could do where you were just like, I'm definitively better than you, and I'm just doing my job.
Right. And I'm not even that excited about it. Yeah. I'm not dancing around. I'm not saying, look at me, look at me, look at me.
It was
an awesome move.
I couldn't figure out how to get Barry Sanders onto my draft board because he didn't have a specific... I mean, spin moves was close because he did a lot of those.
Yeah.
But like, he didn't have a specific action. Kind of like Walter Payton. It wasn't like one thing. It was just like, nah, he just did everything and was better than
everything
else.
Dude, Peyton blocking,
like
in pass pro. I could watch YouTubes of that for an hour and a half.
I mean,
just really, literally anything that guy did was amazing.
I'm going to go two more rounds.
All right, fourth round. What's that?
You want to do what, two more rounds? Or are we just going to keep going for a little while? What are we doing here?
Let's do a few more. Okay. Let's do two or three more. Yeah. We can go faster because I'm taking kind of a swing with my fourth rounder. And I want to hear yours, though. Who you got?
This is another kind of general action. It's not quite as specific as spin moves, but you will be able to picture it in your mind. It is the cutback run in football.
Love it.
So finding the crease, all of the action, the blocking, everything is going one way, and the running back cuts it upfield, finds that crease, and takes off.
Dude, Robert Smith, former Viking, great cutback runner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the only kind of running he was good at. Like he wasn't a great between the tackles runner, but like when there was a crease, all of a sudden he's got like these long, like stallion-esque strides down the field. Dalvin Cook,
different
kind of running back.
The announcer's like, he's a slasher, you know?
Yeah.
I love slasher as a term of endearment for running backs.
Yes.
Yeah, no, this is good.
The ones that I remember, when I remember watching this and going, oh, this is a science, not just a great running back, was the Peyton Manning, Edger, and James Colts, where they loved to run that stretch play. And, you know, and Manning was slow as all get out, but he could get out there and reach that handoff where like, he's handing it off outside the tackles. And then Edge wasn't fast, but such great balance and such great vision. And he would find that crease and get upfield. And I remember watching a game where they showed a statistic, and it was like runs between 8 and 15 yards. And he led the league by like a factor of 3. So he didn't break a lot of long ones, but just chewed up the yardage. And the cutback run or that finding the crease, that's my next pick.
Oh, my gosh, dude. I loved Edger and James. What a cool athlete.
Yes.
What a fun guy to watch play. He looked amazing in the uniform. So he's in the, like, look great in the uniform pantheon. He had an aesthetic that, like, when you were looking at him, you knew you were looking at Edger and James. And just the way that he played, not glamorous, not Barry Sanders-esque, but, like, perfect for that offense. And they would play action off of it, and they'd hit, like, the 30-yard over route to Marvin Harrison. And it was just like clockwork, that offense. So fun to watch. He was kind of the cutback runner of cutback runners. All right. Fourth rounds. This is another thing that like I really enjoyed watching it in real time. It harkens back to an era when sports were a little more understated, especially basketball. And it's a thing that I've incorporated into my pickup game to great, like, enjoyment of other people. And it's funny when I do this because I suck and everybody knows I suck. So it's a funny thing when I do it. It's the Jordan shrug. So like Jordan hits a three or hits like a really important shot. And then he's running back up the floor to play defense and he shrugs at like the scorer's table. I love doing this. I love doing it in pickup. I love when Jordan does it. And again, like being a kid in the 90s and watching him do this before like my frontal lobe was fully formed and before I became like a pretty high-end communicator myself, that communicated something very important to me. And it was derisive without being over the top. I mean, this wasn't analogous to like people trash talking.
Yeah,
like
trash talking. And Jordan was a technical foul for that, but you can make somebody feel like an absolute fool.
Exactly, and it really it hit me at a level that like you could still defend it as classy, but you knew it was real petty. It was real cutting. Only he could really do it earnestly because he was the best in the sport. Like if John Starks had tried to do the shrug, it would come off as really stupid. But when Jordan did it, it was amazing. Round four, I got the Jordan shrug. High upside pick there, I think.
Well, yeah, and
I'm going for traits now.
And this is the first one that you've picked that I it kind of goes along with the Walter Payton thing. Athletes at their best doing something subtle that absolutely just shuts the other team down. But it's the first, like, I would say truly sublime pick you've had where you're like, yeah, there's just,
yeah,
there's something about that.
Yeah, there is. And I stacked my board kind of on the YouTube test. Like it makes the desert island like YouTube list for me. If I had to watch certain things, this would be on it. All right, fifth round pipe. Who you got?
So I think this is going to be my Belichickian pick where it's like, this one's on my board. I don't really care what anybody else thinks. And it's a homer pick. And it is the Kevin Garnett pick and pop from the elbow.
I love it. You just don't see it anymore.
No, you don't see it anymore.
You just don't see it.
He was never an elite scorer because he just that wasn't what he focused on. But that was just an unstoppable move by him. You know, that the mid-range pick and pop, he and Terrell Brandon ran it so well. And just when he would rise up for that jumper from like 17 feet at the elbow, it's almost zen. There's the smoothness, the gathering, the fact that he was 18 inches higher than everybody else on the court when he released that shot, and then just watching it drain. I mean, he hit those at a great rate. It's KG's another athlete where you're like, I couldn't pick a particular action because he did everything. Great passer, great defender, great team basketball player. But the KG pick and pop is just there's a serenity in it. And I could watch those on loop all day as just sort of a, you know,
serenity. It would calm you down. It would make your day better. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to stay here and do a few minutes on this and run a question by you. So I had a fascinating conversation with a friend of mine, my friend Corey. He's an occasional listener to the program. If he knows that I mention his name in this, he'll for sure listen. But we were talking the other day, and the topic came up, when does a sport cease to become that sport for you? And what makes that happen? And this was framed in the context of basketball for both of us, but he was basically just like, if basketball is just guys like driving and kicking to the corner guy so the corner guy can shoot a three, it's not basketball to me anymore. Like, and we assented intellectually to like, this is still basketball for some people, but it's not basketball for me, and it's not enjoyable to watch. Because we grew up in this era similar to you, and we were talking about high post players, right? We were talking about how the 90s Bulls would have like a real plodding, unathletic big like Bill Winnington or Bill Cartwright. But they would also have another big who would...
Stacey King. Yeah, but just run through him.
Stacey King, right. But they'd have a guy like Horace Grant who was another big, but who would kind of work the high post like a magician. And we were both indicating that, like, yes, this is basketball to us. Like, we can we can kill you with Michael Jordan. We can kill you with, like, the white guy who just stands on the perimeter and shoots threes, guys like Steve Kerr and Craig Hodges, who was a black guy, but he was still aesthetically like a white guy who shot threes. Or we could do high post stuff with Horace Grant. Like, it was a certain sort of comprehensive basketball, the likes of which we don't see anymore. And it really struck me as very interesting. And I remember feeling that way about college football circa like a decade ago, where it felt like college football was just like watching a guy take a shotgun snap and throw a bubble screen. And thankfully, it's kind of evolved again away from that. But basketball is at that point where it doesn't really look like basketball to me anymore, which is why your mention of KG doing this one very sublime thing, like, it really resonates with me. Where are you at on that theory?
Yes, I totally agree. And I think basketball and football are the two where you see this most, because, mm-hmm. Although baseball's running into it a little bit now too, because of math, one shot in basketball is worth 50% more than another shot. And so because of that mathematical equation, the game has changed. And so it does not feel at all like what we were familiar with. It doesn't feel nearly as fun to watch. You get to watch a lot of, like, the wrong guys are getting good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing. The wrong guys are being ruled out of the game because they no longer have value. Football seems to kind of ebb and flow. Because, like you said, there was an era of, like, all the bubble screens, but that's just because there's a constant innovation and then catching up. So it changes.
That's right.
Then the defense catches up. Now you see fullbacks coming back into the league and things like that, and people are like, being a power team actually works to our advantage sometimes. Baseball, you're seeing it with home runs and strikeouts. So many guys throw 100 miles an hour, and the defensive shifts that, like, run scoring has become harder, so more guys are striking out. I don't think that's as big of a deal. So, like, I agree with the theory in general that, like, there are certain things. There's a tipping point with sports where you're like, this isn't the game I grew up loving, you know?
It's
a little bit like, I don't enjoy going to the movie theater anymore where they have the recliner seats and all that stuff. I'm like, this is not the movie theater I grew up. I want sticky floors and slightly cramped seats and to have to, you know, glare at the kid kicking my seat behind me. I don't want to pay $72 for three tickets to go sit in mediocre recliners.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I do. And I think you're right. And even with the recliner analogy, it's like, I can see where that's really pleasant for somebody. And like, our kids kind of grew up in that era going to the theater where, like, I don't know, you're going to see, you know, Cars 2 or Toy Story 6 or whatever, everybody's in their recliner, and it's kind of like you're with people, but you're not with people. So it's just different. And, like, I can imagine that there's a kid growing up today who gets really excited about watching Steph Curry stand in the corner and drain threes. Like, I'm just not that person. It's not interesting to me. It's not fun. But when the sport ceases to be the sport. And so in discussing this with Corey, we decided that baseball is still the most like itself in the sense that there will always be a pitcher and a hitter locked in a duel. And you could make the counter argument that baseball's gotten worse because you're either hitting a home run or striking out or whatever. But at the end of the day, it still has that pitcher-hitter kind of energy to it.
And baseball's always had those eras, you know, like, there was the dead ball era. There was the pre-integration era, which means, like, you should take all of Babe Ruth's stats with a massive grain of salt. There's the then there's, like, the second dead ball era in the 60s before they lowered the mound. Like, they literally changed the shape of the mound to give hitters a fighting chance. There's the steroid era. There's the we're gonna call this, like, the shift in strikeout era. Maybe they're gonna call it the era of velocity or what. Like, but in 20 years, they're probably gonna have outlawed the shift. Hitters are going to have figured out, like, so the Twins have this guy named Luis Arraez, who he's sort of Rod Carew-ish in, like, low crouch, he walks more than he strikes out. I think he currently leads the league in OPS without hitting for any power because he just gets on base 48% of the time. Those guys are going to be discovered to be like, oh, they're like that. A contact hitter with a good eye is the new money ball. because
sure.
they can beat yeah. they can beat velocity and they can beat the shift. So like baseball is going to yep. morph back around. It is still like itself. It's just in an era that looks yeah. a certain way, but it still feels like baseball.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think as much as I adore football, it has changed. You know, of course it's changed and rules changes have made it that way. And, you know, the NFL is kind of constantly tinkering with like defensive rules to give an offense an advantage. And, you know, for me, like closest to home, just the fact that linebackers used to be 260 and now they're 220. Like if John Lynch is playing today, he's an inside linebacker, you know, and 20 years ago he was a safety. You know, and that obviously has like aesthetic and sort of strategic implications for the game. I do think we'll see it evolve back the other way a little bit. And you saw New England do it some when they had a healthy fullback, you know, that, and the math was kind of, hey, if the opponent's linebackers are, you know, if it's, you know, the kid from the Colts wears number 53, he's like 215 pounds. 20 years ago, he's a free safety, you know, Darius Leonard, right? We can run at Darius Leonard.
Right.
And we can get yards doing that. Like, I do think it'll swing back the other way, but yeah, a lot of changes. All right, Pipe, let's actually take a break. We'll come back. We'll do my quick fifth round pick and then we'll wrap it.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, we're back, Pipe. These have been strong draft choices. I've got one for my fifth round pick. Again, we're kind of taking swings here. We're kind of doing specialists at this point. So this guy doesn't have to carry my team. This doesn't have to carry my like YouTube watching for the rest of my life. But it's a thing that harkens back to a time that I really enjoyed. And it was something that, to my shame, I emulated as a high school football player. It's Desmond Howard doing the Heisman pose in the end zone.
I love that you emulated that.
I did. Like the idea of like a gumpy white guy in Indiana doing the Heisman pose in the end zone after a touchdown was just I'm embarrassed by that to this day. But yeah, this was like my sophomore year in high school. Desmond Howard's at Michigan. This is peak Michigan, peak winged helmet, yellow pants. Michigan's teams were always amazing. They always had great players. And Desmond Howard was like this Rocket Ismail 2.0, you know, this yeah. gadget guy who would like take a jet sweep to the paint. He was returning kicks. He's catching balls. He's being overvalued by the NFL, you know, the whole thing. And when he would score, and when it became clear that he was like a runaway Heisman candidate, he would score and he'd hit this Heisman pose in the end zone for like 2 seconds. And me and all my like derpy high school buddies in Indiana thought this was the greatest thing ever. And my buddies were like, do it. Like, dude, you got to do it when you get into the end zone. So I scored and I did it. Much to everyone's delight.
No flags
except
on that?
My coach.
No flags on that celebration?
Yeah, no flags. And I think in my mind's eye, I did it for multiple seconds like Desmond Howard. But in reality, I probably did it for like a half second. Like probably nobody even saw it. So yeah, Desmond Howard hitting that Heisman pose. And again, you know, with the sort of advantage of the intervening years and now being in my 40s and being a communicator and realizing what it means to communicate, I look back at that now and I'm like, that was so creative. And most end zone celebrations are inane and idiotic and they remind you that these guys are 20 and they're stupid. But like that one was, it was creative and it was elegant in its own way. My fifth round pick is the Desmond Howard Heisman pose in the end zone. Your thoughts?
I mean, from a nostalgia standpoint, as well as like there's a very, like you said, a very era specific thing there. Like that wouldn't feel at all creative today. It would feel derivative and arrogant. And also that guy's not a quarterback, so he's not winning the Heisman. So it, yeah, it, it encapsulates a lot that's of great significance.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Pipe, what a great exercise, man. This was a super fun episode.
Could we wrap by running through? I feel like you probably have two or three more on your list. We'll call these the undrafted free agents. You know, these are ones that just we don't need to spend a lot of time on them, but I just feel like for our listeners, there's more enjoyment to be had.
We're giving them a call after the draft.
Yeah, they might throw them a couple thousand bucks if they play well.
Yeah, we're bringing them into camp. What do you got, man? Real quick, what do you got for UDFAs here?
All right, so that you're going to absolutely love this one. It is Reggie White's hump move.
Oh my gosh, dude!
This one fits the like. I did not like Reggie White. He was a Green Bay Packer for the majority of his career. He destroyed the Vikings. But this does fit the YouTube. I could watch this all day, and it is just watching him. I mean, it's hard to describe what a hump move is. It's basically contracting your body and then exploding into the offensive tackle, and watch in Reggie White's case, watching him fly backwards 2.5 yards.
So it was one of those like, how does this work?
Yeah,
like freak of nature type moves where you could watch it for an hour. And then you could go in the yard or on the practice field and try to emulate it. And then you realize, like, my body just can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, I would... My dad was an offensive lineman when he played. And when I got into college and stuff, I was a D lineman. And I would try to do the Reggie White hump move on my dad. And, like, I was strong. But I couldn't do it. Like, for whatever reason, I just couldn't do it. And that made it yet more amazing. So, all right, that one dovetails with one of my... very niche undrafted free agent ones. It's Joe Thomas's kick slide.
I knew you were gonna have an offensive lineman technique in here somewhere, and I just didn't expect it to take this long.
Yeah, so I would love to watch Joe Thomas like pass setting against Reggie White's hump move. I think that would be amazing. Like two titans of the industry, two of the best to ever do it. The Joe Thomas, like, so smooth, so athletic. Like, if you're building a left tackle in the lab, he looks like Joe Thomas, you know, long, lean, but still super strong hands, knew when to punch, when to clamp, could get that back hip. Joe Thomas, just a master. I wonder what that looks like against Reggie White. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, that would be fun. My next undrafted free agent is Bryce Harper's swing. You know, may his season rest in peace this year. But
yeah,
I don't understand how a guy swings with that much ferocity and still manages to hit for a high average, lead the league and on base. And I love watching a lot of guys hit home runs, but watching Bryce Harper swing is absolutely phenomenal. It's so explosive.
Yeah, and this speaks to like aesthetic values of things and what makes somebody great for TV versus just great. Like I was trying to explain this to a former student the other day. We were talking about boxers, and I was trying to explain why Irish Mickey Ward was a great TV fighter and not necessarily the greatest fighter, right? Mm-hmm. So like he would have never been the top of his division rankings wise, but he was the guy that you were putting on TV because he always put on a great show, would go toe to toe with people, would bleed. This is the aesthetics of the sport thing. I've got a real niche one here. I don't think this one makes the final roster. Like, I'm bringing this draft choice or this free agent signing into camp just to provide some culture in my clubhouse. It's offensive lines not talking to the media. So when like an entire offensive line group decides that for a whole season they're not talking to the media, I like this. I think it's funny and cool and fun. It's very offensive line-ish. I just really enjoy when this happens.
I think it's fascinating how your draft is so psychological. You are up in athletes' heads. Speaking of psychological or maybe just like psychosis, my last undrafted free agent is charging the mound.
Oh, I love
it.
I love it.
To be clear, this is not getting hit and... you know, tossing your bat and throwing your arms out and talking crap to the pitcher. It is getting hit and turning and charging the mound. Just a straight up, like, you did this to me, here we go. And, like, none of this, like, hold me back business. Like, This is how Robin Ventura got his face beat in by Nolan Ryan. Mm-hmm. This is not a thing you see anymore because nobody wants to get suspended. But charging the mound is, I need to bring a little fire to my team. And this is it right here.
Oh, I agree. This is sublime. This is a great one. The other thing I love about about mound charging scenarios is like over the span of the 60 feet, 6 inches, sometimes you can almost see the gears turning and you can see the guy like change his mind a little bit where like the first 30 feet, man, he's like a bull in a china shop. You know, he's going full tilt. But then like he's starting to dial it back a little bit by the time he gets to the mound. Like it gives him just enough time to think. Those are always entertaining
Which
scenarios.
Is why pitchers never charging. Got hurt when the mound got charged. It wasn't because they were the toughest guys in the field. I mean, some of them were, but some of them is because like this huge muscular hitter's charging and then going, you know what? I should probably wrap him up around the waist instead of like putting my forehead in his sternum.
Right. I'm not going to throw my right. I'm just going to kind of like wrap up around the waist and then trust that everybody else is going to break us up eventually. Yeah, no. I would say just angry charging in baseball in general.
Yeah.
Like managers or players leaving the dugout angrily. This was awesome. Like I remember as a kid, and this is just like long, languid, stupid summer days as a kid. I remember me and my buddy Mitch Warner trying to emulate like the George Brett charging out of the dugout thing, where like one of us would stand at the fence and one of us would be the ump and like we're trying to emulate like his stride and what he looked like charging out onto the field. It was ridiculous.
And that might have been the most like explosive thing George Brett, Hall of Famer George Brett, ever did. Like
that's
he
true.
Came out of that and you're like, oh, if that was an edge rusher, that tackle is still in his 3-point stance. Like he came out of that dugout so fast.
Yeah, like his 10-yard split is amazing. It's world class. You know, and he's got the big like face full of chaw.
Yes.
just so 80s baseball, you know, in every way. And I love that, man. Charging of any kind. I think the closest you get now, and this would have probably made my undrafted list, is like baseball stare downs. It's a lot like watching Top Gun Maverick. It's just a lot of guys staring at each other and not doing anything really, but like you get a lot of pointed staring in baseball.
Well, the closest again, you get is that they still let people fight in hockey, which is one of the greatest, that doesn't fit in this era at all, things.
It's remarkable. Like it really is.
The rule is still like, well, we'll break them up when they fall down. But until then, by all means, punch each other's heads.
I know it. It's crazy. Yeah, where else do you see that culturally? That's just a lot of fun. Pipe, this draft has been a lot of fun. I think our teams are very different, but they're both really strong. I think you look at our two rosters and you go, these teams are both contenders, but for completely different reasons. I like your team. I like my team. Mm-hmm. Love the exercise. Great idea. Maybe next step we do like old timey jobs that we've had in sports. Cause I have questions about your like Vikings pro shop job.
Yeah. I've had a couple jobs that are sports related. That would be a fun conversation.
That would be a blast for sure. But Pipe, we've done what we always do in this program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some sports nostalgia. And until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. Be sure to visit thehappyrant.com to check out our merchandise, learn more about upcoming live events, and listen to past episodes.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? I mean, you are called by God, and aren't we all praying the big prayer, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? So if we put two and two together, you've got a message to deliver, my friend. Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, art to make, or businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. I use my mic like a machete, so if you don't like to get your toes stepped on or pushed off cliffs to finally jump on in with Jesus, I may be too much for you. But if you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com today.